Are you ready to talk baseball? Well, step up to the plate. You're listening to Passion for the Pastime. And here's your host, Walter.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? And welcome back to another episode of Passion for the Pastime podcast. I'm your host, Walter. And let me start by saying, boy, does it feel good to be back. It is the off season. We are done with the 2021 season. We got a lot to talk about, actually, from the last time that I spoke with you guys. A lot has transpired. We have a new World Series champion, 60-game champion. Forget about it. Never happened. We got a 162 already lined up for you. The Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves, out of all the teams that made the postseason. Actually, it was a shocker that they made the postseason without Ronald Acuna. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We'll get more in depth on that. But we got plenty of news to cover. It has been a while. I apologize for that. I apologize for abandoning you when you needed me most. But let me just tell you, that NLDS between the Giants and the Dodgers, it took a toll on me. I had to remove myself from baseball for a little bit. It was a rough last couple of weeks or weeks following the NLDS. But we're back a month later. We're ready to go. We got the offseason going on. We got free agency. We got some guys signing already. So we're going to talk about all of that. We got some Hall of Fame ballots that just came out. We're going to talk about who I think should be in. I mean, we've kind of already done this conversation in the past. But always when the ballot comes out, we have some new guys on the ballot who could possibly warrant some votes. We'll talk about all of that. We got a lot to talk about, a lot of news, but let's just get going with how's everybody doing? How is everyone doing on this week of Thanksgiving? I am thankful, all right? I'm thankful for you. I'm thankful for my health. I'm thankful that we got through a 162 baseball season. All right. And the way that it finished, it was amazing. It was amazing. And let me just say, shout out to Dusty Baker. All right. Dusty Baker, the manager for the Houston Astros, comes up on the losing end once again. And you just feel for the guy. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but me, you know, growing up as a Giants fan in San Francisco, Dusty Baker was my manager when I started becoming baseball conscious, if you will. And the 0-2 World Series always is in the back of my mind. It still hurts. Just right now, I say 2002. Ah, God, I got a pain in my chest. Like, it still hurts to think about that. And for a long time, I had a lot of resentment towards Dusty Baker, right? I mean, you got to think about it. 2002, I was born in 92. I was 10 years old at the time. And you know, all I knew was my team needs to win this thing. And if they don't win, I mean, you gotta place blame somewhere. And it was easily on Dusty Baker. And because of game six, right? Game six, he pulls Russ Ortiz, the story of he gives the ball to Russ Ortiz and say that this is gonna be you know, memorabilia, or this is going to be worth something someday, or I forget what the context of it was, but he handed pretty much the game ball to Russ Ortiz when he pulled him out. Giants end up losing that game. They end up losing the World Series in seven to the Los Angeles Angels. Still hurts. And for that reason, it took me a long time. Probably up until recently where I was like, okay, Dusty, I forgive you. It took me a while. So when he finally made it into the World Series, taking on the Atlanta Braves, which this World Series, I don't know what it did for a lot of people. If you weren't a Houston Astros fan, who was really rooting for the Astros? Well, right, you can't see me, but I got my hand up. I was rooting for the Houston Astros, not necessarily the team, not for Carlos Correa, not for my dude, Jose Altuve. That's my guy. I'm still rooting for him. Buzzer or not, I don't care. That's my dude. Speaking up, standing up for the little guys. You know what I'm saying? We're the same height. That every time I see him on TV in the field, I'm like, okay, so that's what I'd look like in a major league uni. that's what I'd look like in the batter's box. But anyways, it's not none of those guys. I'm not rooting for any of them. I was rooting for Dusty Baker. Now, those of you that know me personally will hear that statement and say, really? You were rooting for the Astros? Really? You were rooting for Dusty Baker? Were you really? You guys are shocked. I was shocked myself. But, Dusty is one of those guys. It happens in every sport. He's a baseball lifer. He has been in baseball for literally his entire life. How old is he now? Like 78? Maybe he's not 78, but he, you know what I'm saying. He is old. He is up there. And forgiveness if Dusty Baker is not 78. I'm going to actually look up how old he is right now. But, you know, Dusty Baker, he's getting to the end of his career, right? He's getting to the end of his managerial career. And you just pull for this guy. And to do it for the Houston Astros and for everything that he did with that organization, he turned them around. He made them a respectable team once again. That was very difficult. I mean, to be thrown into the fire with the Houston Astros immediately following the and he's 72. He's 72 years old. So sorry, Dusty, for throwing 6 years on your life. I apologize. 78 sounded a little better. So I'm sorry. He's 72 years old. 72 years old from Riverside, California. Anyways, when you look at what he had to endure when he jumped into that managerial spot, it was a challenge. I mean, everyone. He wasn't even the manager of the team, and he was getting the boos. He was getting the heat, and he handled it gracefully. You know what I mean? That is the perfect move. I mean, that was a great move by the Houston Astros bringing in Dusty Baker. So when he makes it back to the World Series, I was rooting for him. He deserves to get one. But again, there's always that guy in every single sport. Just can't win the big one. And that might be what we're looking at with Dusty Baker. He doesn't get it done once again. Hopefully he can at some point. Maybe, I don't know how much longer he has to be in the manager spot in Houston. But hopefully it's coming. Hopefully it's coming soon. And if it's not in Houston and he goes on somewhere else, hopefully he does get that ring. Because if there is somebody that is deserving on that Houston Astros team, it is Dusty Baker. It is most definitely Dusty Baker. But aside from that, I mean, we're talking about the losers here. And I don't mean to call Dusty Baker a loser, but hey, it is what it is. The Astros lost the World Series. And now you look on the flip side of it. The team that won it, let me just tell you, when the Giants lost to the Los Angeles Dodgers, again, I'm still devastated. I'm not as devastated as 02. It's okay. I'm over it. It only took me a month. I'm over it. Okay. It never happened. Just like that 60-game title, never happened. Let's talk about the Braves some more. But when the Giants lost that series, and you're looking at the NLCS of the Braves and the Dodgers, honestly, I gave the Braves maybe two games. And I know that the Dodgers were banged up. I know that they were going into that thing limping because they just had to endure a whole 162 season. You mean they're not all healthy going into the playoffs? You mean they're not all just like getting into their groove of baseball in 60 games? Really? This is what 162 feels like? Yeah, we had to remind them, right? But anyways, they were broken down. Won 106 games. Still didn't win the division. And same with the Giants, but with the Dodgers also. That division race, which will go down as one of the greatest division races in NL West history and baseball history. Literally, the Titan of the Dodgers go 106. If you were told that the Dodgers would win 106 games, I don't think that you would question the fact that they would be NL West champions. But it took one team, the San Francisco Giants, the orange and black, to win 107. And that's exactly what they did. But in doing so, here's my little thing. Giants fans, hold up your orange and black proudly, because we didn't win the NLDS. Let me just say, taking the Dodgers to the limit, we pretty much eliminated them. We didn't know it at the time, but we eliminated them. Let me just say, because that division race diminished both teams. I think actually if the Giants made it, if the Dodgers made it, I mean, the Dodgers did make it, but if the Giants made it, same, I think it would have been the same result. The Braves were hot. They were more fresh. They had some guys playing for something. Made a whole bunch of deals at the deadline that people were, I was laughing at it, honestly. I don't know if we can go back and listen to some of the tape from trade deadline. But I'm like, okay, they're picking up Adam Duvall. Okay, they're picking up Rosario. Really? They're making really? They're trying? Oh, they're picking up Jorge Soler? What's that going to do? You know, they make all these trades. But guess what? Every single one of those guys came through for the Braves when it mattered most. So the Braves, I mean, hats off to you for, one, defeating the Los Angeles Dodgers. Couldn't be happier. But taking it the next step and winning the World Series. First time since Bobby Cox era. What was that, 94? Is that the last time that they won? I don't have it in front of me. I'm just throwing numbers out there. I don't want to say it was 94. Maybe earlier than that, but I do think it's 94. The Braves. World Series champions. That's what we could talk about now. The World Series champions, Atlanta Braves. And I wonder, you know, how a young Buster Posey felt. You know, in 94. How old was, actually, now that I keep throwing out, you know, 1994, let me just make sure that the Braves won the World Series in 94, first of all. It was actually in 95. It was 95 when they won it. So I was a year off. But a young Buster Posey, I mean, he grew up in Atlanta. One of his favorite players was Chipper Jones. And by my calculation, he was about 7 years old, 7, 8 years old when the Braves won the World Series. About the same age, roughly, of the 2002 Giants. Still hurts to say it. But that left such a lasting impact on me. I could only imagine what Buster Posey, you know, I mean, is he still a Braves fan? That's the question. I mean, he grew up watching the Braves, grew up in Georgia. I would assume that he had some type of fandom with the Braves winning the World Series. But that's where I kind of segue into Buster Posey. I mean, you figure, why am I talking about Buster Posey so much right now? Trying to make that connection, trying to make it smooth. You didn't even know what was happening. And here's where we get to the breaking news. If you haven't heard the news on Buster Posey, number one, my question is, what have you been doing? Are you living under a rock? Because this was the biggest news. It shook the Bay Area more than an earthquake. All right, people didn't see it coming. I'll tell you right now, I kind of had a feeling. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say that, well, I knew it was happening. I knew it was going to come. I'm just saying I wasn't surprised when it happened. Honestly, I thought that 2019 was our last time seeing Buster Posey. I didn't believe that he was going to come back after he sat out in 2020. And in his press conference and everything. Oh, by the way, Buster Posey retired. I didn't mention that. Buster Posey retired from baseball after, what, 12 years with the Giants? Retired from baseball, went out on top, which, by the way, Buster Posey won Comeback Player of the Year in his last year. That's the way you want to do it, and that's why I respect his decision. He went out on his own terms. He didn't let the game decide it for him. He decided when he wanted to hang up the cleats. And that's all you can hope for as an athlete. I mean, that's what a lot of athletes always talk about. And Buster Posey to go out on top, I mean, yeah, it would have been ideal to win a World Series, but for him to have the career year that he had, just his resurgence, to come back and get the honors of winning Comeback Player of the Year, that's how you want to do it. You want to model it on Buster Posey. And that's not the only thing you want to model. I mean, anything that Buster Posey did on and off the field, he was the model citizen. He was the model. He was the standard of a San Francisco Giant. And he retires. And we're going to miss him. I mean, it was a lot of emotion to take in when the news came out. And I'm still, you know, again, I wasn't surprised. But I feel like it hasn't sunk in yet. Reality hasn't happened yet. I think maybe for a lot of Giants fans, because we haven't had to see anyone else behind home plate. We haven't had to look at anyone else call signs or put down the signs rather. And I think that's going to be a little bit of a wake up call. For San Francisco Giants fans. And we all know what we're losing in Buster Posey. But, you know, it's always the question of, was Buster Posey good enough to make it into the Hall of Fame? That's what everyone was talking about when he retired. You know, immediately when a player retires, that's the first thing that everyone talks about. Is he good enough to get into the Hall of Fame in 5 years when he's eligible? And a few years ago, when Buster Posey was having his hip issues, I probably would have told you, no, he didn't do enough statistically. But I think that's where we get into the conversation of the criteria for a catcher needs to change a little bit. And the reason why I say that is because Buster Posey, and we'll see it for years after Buster Posey, We're going to see it. We're going to feel it. But the thing with Buster Posey is not only was he the cleanup hitter for 3-time World Series champion San Francisco Giants, the cleanup hitter, but he was the catcher for every single game. Not every single game, but you know what I mean. He was the catcher out there. And not only did he do it with the bat, but what he brought as far as intangibles. Intangibles, it's the same conversation of what people have with Draymond Green, why he should be in the NBA Hall of Fame, Basketball Hall of Fame, is the intangibles. You don't see it on the stat sheet. That's exactly the same thing with Buster Posey. You don't see everything that he does for a team, for a pitching staff, for a bullpen. When you go back and listen to interviews of Logan Webb, when you go back and listen to interviews of Kevin Gausman and Discofani, when they're feeling it. I remember not too long ago when Logan Webb was talking about, you know, looking in at Buster Posey. He didn't have to think about anything else. All he did was look in, get the sign, and throw it. Literally took all the mental game out of the equation. He focused on throwing the pitch that Buster Posey knew that he can throw. That not only does it for young guys, it does it for veterans. Just the confidence that Buster Posey instills in his pitchers and the confidence that the pitchers have in their catcher to where they don't have to think about it. I know my guy is going to put down what I need to throw and put me in a good position. And to me, that is the mark of a Hall of Fame catcher. And honestly, I feel like that's the aspect of Buster Posey's game that the San Francisco Giants are going to miss the most, is his ability to call one hell of a game. A hell of a game. And yeah, I mean, sure, they're going to miss his bat in the lineup without question. but they're going to really miss the leadership ability of Buster Posey and the ability to call the game, to pretty much take that burden off of the shoulders of his pitchers. And honestly, one final thought on Buster Posey. You know, I'm old enough now to have seen, and it's weird. It's a weird feeling. I saw Buster Posey's first game. I saw his last in a Giants uniform. Literally, I was there that night, NLDS, when Buster Posey smacks a home run. Should have went into the damn cove. Should have went into the cove. Can we get rid of those damn cannons? Come on. It should have been his last home run. Should have been in the cove. But I got a beautiful view of it. Right down the first baseline. That's where I was. Dodger fans all around me. And Buster sent that place, sent Oracle Park into chaos with one swing of the bat. Literally the loudest I had ever heard that ballpark. Ever. And I've been to a lot of Giants games. That was by far the loudest that place ever got. And when I'm talking to the future fans of baseball, when I'm talking 20 years down the line, when I'm talking to my kids, when I'm talking to my grandkids, when I'm talking to people about the legend of Gerald Buster Posey, I can tell them that I was there that night. I could tell them that I saw Buster Posey's last home run live and in person. And it was probably one of the most magical moments in San Francisco Giants history. So, Buster Posey, point blank, should be in the Hall of Fame. He'll be on the ballot in 5 years from now. But on the other side, we're going to talk some more Hall of Fame talk because we have guys on the ballot right now. Ballot was just released. Hall of Fame ballot. We're going to talk about that. We got some newcomers who maybe you vote for, maybe you don't. But we got some newcomers and we have some guys, their last chance of getting in to the Hall of Fame. We're going to talk about that. On the other side, you're listening to Passion for the Pastime Podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to Passion for the Pastime Podcast. Now, we just wrapped up talking about the potential Hall of Fame career of a Mr. Buster Posey. Now, we'll have to wait about 5 years until we find out if he does get into the Hall of Fame. If it was up to me, if I was voting, if he was on this ballot, the new ballot that just came out that we're about to talk about, Buster Posey would be in the Hall of Fame. But we'll get to that. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. But we have a 2022 Hall of Fame ballot that was just released, and we got to talk about it. I mean, every year it's been a talking point because now this is the final year for four guys. Now we have 30 people on the ballot, 17 returning, four of those 17. It's their last year to get in, and you know who those guys are. It's Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Curt Schilling, and Sammy Sosa. Now, Curt Schilling, he posted the most votes percentage-wise of votes to get into the Hall of Fame last year of those four. He was right around 71%. Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, on the other hand, they were at 60%. And then when you look at Sammy Sosa, all the way at the bottom at 17%. So very long shot for Sammy Sosa. And I would even say a long shot for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. I mean, they need to jump up to 75%. Curt Schilling is on the cusp, which we'll get into. But Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, they need essentially a 15% boost to get in to the Hall. And I don't know where you guys sit on it, and a lot of you know where I've sat on it, because every year since I've been doing this podcast, every year that the ballot comes out, I defend Barry Lamar Bonds. I defend Bonds for getting into the Hall of Fame. It is a crime against baseball, the fact that Barry Bonds is not in the Hall of Fame. I understand the PEDs and everything like that. I know the dynamic, the shadow that is cast around Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. I understand that. But for them not to be in the Hall of Fame, it's erasing history. It's erasing what happened in the mid to late 90s, early 2000s. It is erasing an entire decade plus of baseball. If you don't get in, arguably one of the best hitters that this game has ever seen. And Roger Clemens, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. Obviously, we know the PED situation surrounding both of these guys. But when you look at the rest of the ballot, right, we have 13 new guys that have come onto the ballot. And we'll talk about certain individuals as we go on in the segment. We talk about this Hall of Fame ballot. But when you look at David Ortiz, someone that has been linked to PED usage. Now, I don't remember if PEDs ever came out against David Ortiz, but I want to say that he did test positive. He failed a drug test in the early 2000s when the Red Sox were going on their run prior to them winning the World Series. I believe that their first World Series was in 2004. But, you know, when you hear those rumors, and he had a failed drug test, and that was at the time where MLB did not have penalties against PED usage. Think about that. And you look at Manny Ramirez, who repeatedly was tested positive for PEDs with his time in Boston and in Los Angeles. It doesn't take a rocket science to figure out, oh yeah, David Ortiz probably used also. You know what I mean? Like, he failed a drug test in 2003. So is David Ortiz getting in the Hall? Is he on your ballot? Are you voting for him? Same thing goes with A-Rod. Is A-Rod getting in? Again, one of these generational hitters that we saw with A-Rod. But again, he's one of those guys that he actually admitted to using PEDs in the early 2000s. But and I believe he got popped for PEDs probably three times in public record. I'm not sure exactly how many times that A-Rod got caught. But I mean, AL MVP, you know his numbers, you know the statistics. Played for the Yankees, all that. And I mean, even before he got to the Yankees, he was tearing it up with the Rangers. And you know, A-Rod was a player that I looked up to when I was younger, him and Ken Griffey Jr. But you know, when you look at these guys on the ballot, like I said, with A-Rod, with David Ortiz, there's some guys that are in the Hall currently right now that were suspected of PED usage, and yet there's no backlash for them. You know, A-Rod might not get in to the Hall because of the blatantly obvious and multiple times, multiple offenders. I don't know if he'll get into the Hall, but he's deserving. I mean, I say it in the same breath. He's deserving as well, because it's you're erasing the history of baseball if you're not letting these guys in. Yeah, there's the record books, and that's where people will say, well, they don't have to be in the Hall of Fame. They'll be in the record books. But the Hall of Fame is prestigious. Well, how prestigious is the Hall of Fame if they have, because your basis of not getting these guys in is that it shows on their character. We don't want guys of their character in the Hall of Fame. Meanwhile, depends on what you're looking at. you have guys in the Hall of Fame that had very questionable traits in character as well. So what are we talking about here? I mean, it's subjective. And, you know, someone's going to want Barry Bonds in. Another person isn't going to want Barry Bonds in. He needs around 50. I want to say that the number is 50. What did I look up? It's 53 votes for Barry Bonds to get in. He needs 53 more votes to get into the Hall of Fame. That is a lot. I mean, you look at Curt Schilling, which, again, you want to talk about character. I mean, we're really considering an individual that off the field, I mean, his character does not represent the Hall of Fame, yet he's getting votes. He's at 71%. And yet Barry Bonds isn't in. The home run king, arguably one of the better hitters the game of baseball has ever seen. And Barry Bonds, he enters his last year of eligibility. We all know that. And that's the big question, I mean, surrounding this, because the speculation is that, well, my argument is that if you're going to vote for David Ortiz, but you don't vote in Barry Bonds, well, then none of these guys should get in. So I understand having Barry Bonds wait the 10 years. Okay, he's waited. This is the year. You get him in. You get him into the Hall of Fame. And but then the question is, all right, well, then does everyone get in that use PEDs? Then I contradict myself to where, you know, a Sammy Sosa wouldn't get into the Hall of Fame. Manny Ramirez, where the argument could be made. I mean, Manny Ramirez was phenomenal. One of the most feared hitters the game in the early 2000s. I mean, I remember playing MVP baseball. I think I've talked about it before on the podcast, MVP baseball. And you would pitch to this guy. Him and Albert Pujols were the hardest people to pitch to because their strike zone was literally all red. What red means is that's their hot spot. That's their sweet spot. You don't want to pitch the ball there. Well, how do you throw strikes when the entire strike zone is red? you know what I mean? Like, that was video game stuff, but it translated to the field. That's how crazy those guys are, or how crazy they were. So an argument for Manny Ramirez is going to be a little bit difficult because, again, he was one of those guys that tested positive multiple times, the same with A-Rod. But Barry Bonds deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. He was a Hall of Famer prior to any PED usage. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, but were PEDs against were they outlawed? Like, were there rules against PEDs at that time? I don't remember there being rules. Again, I was younger. I just remember seeing the long ball. Honestly, that drew my attention to the game that I love today, was seeing Barry Bonds play, was seeing Ken Griffey Jr. play that summer of 98. It was amazing. It was an amazing time to be a baseball fan, and especially for me coming into my baseball consciousness around that time. It was crazy. I remember it. I mean, I don't remember it detail by detail, but I remember the excitement. I remember the buzz. Like, everyone around the ballpark were talking about the home run race and McGuire and Sosa and Ken Griffey, and then it turned into Sosa and McGuire, and it was impressive stuff. Like, that's where I started to really pay attention to the game because of what I was seeing in front of me. Now, I'm not saying that that's a whole reason to put a guy into the Hall, but Barry Bonds was a Hall of Famer prior to anything that he took. That was blatantly obvious. Everyone knows it. And again, by not putting him into the Hall of Fame, it's erasing an entire time period of baseball. And those that came after. You know what I mean? So if you don't put in Barry Bonds, I don't want to see David Ortiz in there. I don't want to see Alex Rodriguez in there. Because there's no way in hell that Barry Bonds should be the scapegoat. He's already been that. He's already been the poster child. If you were to make a movie on the steroid era, Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds would be on that movie poster. They would be on the movie poster. And they're the poster childs of the era. And we get it. We understand. Yeah. We don't want that to happen again. But baseball allowed it to happen anyway. And yet, the players, not anyone else in charge, the players are the ones that are being punished for it. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. So, we'll see what happens with Barry Bonds in his final year of eligibility. It's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. Again, he needs a 15% jump. 53 votes is what he needs. Roger Clemens needs 54. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. And earlier in the year, in the season, following the passing of Hank Aaron, a little bit after the passing of Hank Aaron, I had the opportunity to speak with Rob Parker. And he pretty much came in. We were talking Hall of Fame. We were talking Hank Aaron and what it was like to grow up to watch Hank Aaron and someone hit home runs the way that he did. And we transitioned that into Barry Bonds talk. And I asked him, like, what are your thoughts on Barry Bonds? Are you voting for him? And do you think he gets in his final year of eligibility? And Rob came out and said, yes, I voted for him every single year that he's been on the ballot. And he said that he's a Hall of Famer. And he also said that the people that didn't vote for him in the first 9 years, they're supposedly going to be a rush of people saying, all right, it's his final year. Let's get him in now. And he didn't agree with that because I understand his point because he came out and pretty much said, if you don't write down a player's name on a ballot for 9 straight years, and then all of a sudden in year 10, you want to throw a whole bunch of votes at him because he might not get in, that doesn't make sense. You need to vote for a player who's a Hall of Famer every single time. But he's saying that he's anticipating Barry Bonds getting in because there are writers that we're going to make him wait the 10. So we'll see how much that happens. And maybe in the offseason, we'll be able to talk with Rob and follow up on that. I know, obviously, we can't get into his voting because the results will be released in January. But just what he speculates, what will happen, kind of revisit that. And look at the rest of the ballot. Look at who else is on there, questionable. I mean, a huge question mark is Alex Rodriguez. David Ortiz, because he had a failed drug test. But again, it was during the time that MLB didn't have penalties for positive PED tests. So if Big Poppy can get in, and I love me some Big Poppy, if David Ortiz can get in, Barry Bonds better be in there before then. That's all I'm saying. So the ballot, always stirring up the controversy, because I know this is a subject that a lot of people feel passionate about. You know, cheaters don't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. But Barry, he needs to be in there. He needs to be in there for the sake of the game of baseball. So we'll see what happens with the Hall of Fame ballot. Other guys that are making their debut. Look at Tim Lincecum, the freak. He's on there. Be interesting to see how much votes he get. I don't know if Tim Lincecum will get into the Hall of Fame. I doubt it. I don't think that he had the longevity. But man, was Tim Lincecum an electric player, big time Timmy Jim, right? The franchise, the freak. He needs to be in the Hall of Fame of nicknames, is what Tim Lincecum needs to be in. But Lincecum, he's on the ballot for the first time. Jimmy Rollins. I feel like Jimmy Rollins is a Hall of Famer. not first ballot Hall of Famer, but I feel like he'll get there. Mark Teixeira, I think he'll get voted in. Jonathan Papelbon, one of the elite closers. Joe Nathan also, first year on the ballot. A lot of Giants on this ballot. Now that I'm looking at it, you got Tim Hudson in there. He barely stayed on the ballot. AJ Pierzynski, are we considering him a Giant? I think a lot of people want to forget that time period. It was AJ Pierzynski. Prince Fielder is on the ballot for the first time. Carl Crawford, you guys remember Carl Crawford? Jeff Kent's on that ballot. Not for the first time. He was on the first time last year. So we'll see. I think Jeff Kent is deserving of the Hall of Fame. So there's a lot of interesting names on there. Todd Helton also. I think he'll probably get a jump this year because all that controversy with the PED guys. They're all going to start coming. Get ready. This is going to be a topic of conversation for the next at least 5 years. Guaranteed. Because there's going to be guys where, yeah, he probably used. But if Barry Bonds ain't in there, they shouldn't be in either. That's all I'm saying on that. So next, that's enough Hall of Fame talk. More Hall of Famers, actually, that are still in the game. Let's appreciate these guys. They're in free agency. Max Scherzer, definitely going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, come on. Clayton Kershaw, first ballot Hall of Famer if you don't include his playoff numbers. But Clayton Kershaw out there. You going to call Freddie Freeman a Hall of Famer? I don't know. I mean, he's a good player. Good player. Too early for Corey Seager, probably. Anthony Rizzo, Nelson Cruz. I think Nelson Cruz is deserving of a Hall of Fame vote when it gets to that point. But tons of guys to talk about in the free agency market that are still available at this moment in time. We're going to get into that. We're going to see what the rumors are saying. We got some off-season talk to talk about here. We're talking free agents on the other side. We're going to get into all that. You're listening to Passion for the Pastime podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to Passion for the Pastime podcast, and we are now wrapping up this episode of the podcast. Welcome back, and I am excited to be back. We are in full off-season mode. Free agency is upon us, but before we get into that, we got the CBA that is coming up. They still have yet to be in agreement with Major League Baseball and the Players Union, so we'll have to monitor that. There could be a potential lockout. Everything is pointing to December 1st at midnight. Everything is pointing to there being a lockout. We're not sure how long it's going to be, but with Manfred talking last week, he came out and said that we remain committed, number one priority, to make an agreement prior to December 1st. So, again, they're trying to get an agreement, but it isn't trending that there is going to be an agreement prior to December 1st. So what that means is that there will be a labor lockout to where they have to figure something out. So, I mean, it's better that it happens in December and not in April. You know what I mean? So, don't freak out because Manfred, he came out and said that they'd rather have it happen at this moment in time and to where it's not going to interfere with games to be played. And with the potential lockout, I mean, there was a lot of anticipation that free agency might have been a little slow, which it has to a degree, but tons of pitchers have been signing left and right and extensions as well. I mean, JD Martinez, he exercised his option, so he's staying with Boston. So Boston fans love that. Jose Berrios, he signed a 7-year, $131 million extension with the Toronto Blue Jays. And Brandon Belt, he accepted his qualifying offer at $18.5 million. Justin Verlander, he's not going anywhere. He's staying in Houston with a 1-year, $25 million with a player option in year two worth $25 million as well. Eduardo Rodriguez. This was a big shocker, which actually could change the landscape of the starting pitching market in Boston. Eduardo Rodriguez, he leaves Boston and goes to Detroit? To the Tigers? He left to the Tigers for a five-year, $77 million contract. So that affects the Red Sox. That affects the Blue Jays. That affects everybody. That affects a lot of people who were in on starting pitchers, and also the Angels. But the Angels, they go ahead and they signed Thor. They signed Noah Syndergaard to a one-year contract worth $21 million. And the Angels are heavy on pitching right now. They're trying to look at Marcus Stroman. They're looking at Robbie Ray. They're looking at everybody and anybody that has an arm, because that was their big downfall. I mean, literally, they had Shohei Ohtani. That's it. That is all the Angels had. So adding Noah Syndergaard into the fold, that is a, and I believe they added Alex Cobb as well. So they're trying to fix up that rotation. So good on the Angels, because we need to see some Mike Trout in the postseason. We want to see some Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout, Anthony Rendon. We want to see those bats in the postseason at least once in our lifetime. You know, like let's try to get that going. But a lot of signings, and then actually the Giants, they went ahead and signed Anthony Discofani. They signed Discofani to a three-year deal, $36 million. There was a lot of rumors saying that the Giants were looking at signing a lot of free agents in the next coming days. And then, boom, here we go with Discofani. And it looks like Alex Wood might be agreeing to a deal per John Morosi, with a two-year deal worth north of $10 million. So it's going to be interesting. I'm not sure what the excitement is on bringing back Alex Wood and Discofani. I mean, they had great years. Scott Harris on the Hot Stove show on KNBR, he was talking about, you know, when you have a team that had so much success, you want to try to keep as many pieces as you can. So they're definitely doing that on the pitching side of things. Gausman is still out there, though. Gausman is still out there. Do you want to try to bring him back? Is the price range a little too steep? And all, especially with Eduardo Rodriguez leaving to Detroit from Boston, that might open up a possibility for Kevin Gausman to go there. He is familiar. He was with the Baltimore Orioles, so he's familiar with that division. Not recently, but he is familiar with the American League East. So maybe he goes back to the East. He goes to Boston. There's a lot of possibilities with all these pitchers. It's pretty much like musical chairs. I mean, this guy, or they're just swapping guys. Like, this guy goes here. Oh, well, that makes an opening for this guy. This guy's going to go here. So you never know. Kevin Gausman could end up in Toronto, and Robbie Ray can end up in San Francisco. You know what I mean? Because the Giants, they are going to be aggressive. They are not going to sit around. They are trying to bolster up that starting rotation. I don't think that they're done. I do think that they're going to add a bat or two. They have plenty of money. They have plenty of money. Discofani is actually, I believe, the first. I saw a note on Twitter earlier. Forgot who posted it. I want to say it was Jeff Passan. He's the first guy on payroll for 2024. All right, they have a lot of money to look at. So I mean, you guys want to load up on starting pitching? I mean, Max Scherzer is out there. There's a lot of rumors with the Giants being involved. Well, not necessarily the Giants, but you would almost assume that the Giants are going to be involved in Max Scherzer because of the starting pitching market. But teams that have been linked to Max Scherzer, Mike Trout, he wants the Angels to get him bad. Dodgers are still favorites to get Max Scherzer back. You know, the Yankees, you can never rule out the Yankees. They have deep pockets. They have as much money as they could want. So it just depends on how much money they want to spend. The Red Sox also, again, with losing Eduardo Rodriguez, they have possibilities there with the starting rotation. I mean, you have Chris Sale there. You know, they need to bolster up that starting rotation. So Red Sox are a possibility. He could go meet with his old teammate down in Houston with Justin Verlander. Verlander just signed, but, you know, old teammates. He used to play for Dusty when Dusty was coaching in Washington. So there's a possibility there. And then also the other team in New York, the Mets. The Mets are willing to spend as much as it takes. Literally, that is what Steve Cohen has said. He said that they are going to spend what it takes. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Max Scherzer. Now, next up on the free agent conversation for the starting pitchers, someone that I already mentioned, but Robbie Ray. Robbie Ray actually won the AL Cy Young Award, and he won it in a landslide. I mean, the one guy that voted for Garrett Cole, what's going on? he should have won it unanimously, but he got 29 of the 30 first place votes. So he won the AL Cy Young, and it's not common to see a AL Cy or a Cy Young Award winner go into free agency in the following year, and it's actually happened twice in back to back seasons, but it's only happened 9 times. He's the 9th player to win a Cy Young and go into free agency, and of the previous 8, because Robbie Ray hasn't signed anywhere yet. Of the previous 8, 4 of them, literally, it's half. It's 50-50 whether Robbie Ray stays with Toronto or he finds a new home. 4 of them have previously changed teams. 4 of the 8 have changed teams, which means the other 4 stayed with the team that they were on. So Robbie Ray winning the Cy Young, he'll be the tiebreaker of that statistic. Just throwing that out there. He's the 9th player to win a Cy Young and go into free agency. Obviously, last year, Trevor Bauer was that player, which, you know, however much you want to play into the 60-game season's awards, but Trevor Bauer won that Cy Young award and ended up going to the Dodgers, leaving the Cincinnati Reds. So when you look at Robbie Ray, obviously, Toronto is, I wouldn't say a front runner, but, you know, he gets there, and he has a ton of success, the most success that he's had. He had flashes in Arizona, but he had the most success in Toronto. So that's a question. That's a pitch that the Blue Jays would want to do to Robbie Ray. And hopefully I'll be able to talk to Ben Nicholson-Smith over there in Toronto and see what's going on with multiple free agents that they have going on over there. We'll talk about Marcus Semien coming up in a bit as well. Who's on free agent market, but the Blue Jays, why leave? If you were successful, your only place that you were successful, why would you want to leave? I mean, obviously, yes, for the money. But if you care about winning, stay there. I mean, the Blue Jays have a ton of promise. And then now he has the help of, Jose Berrios is going to be there. But with the signing, with the extension, was that the money that could have gone to Robbie Ray? Are they now out of the running necessarily for the big bucks for Robbie Ray? That'll be something interesting to follow. And then again, also I mentioned earlier with Robbie Ray, the Angels, I mean, they have deep pockets. Even the Los Angeles Dodgers, I mean, the Dodgers, should they want to upgrade, because they have free agents of their own as well. They have Max Scherzer, as we talked about, but they also have Clayton Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw is out there. He hasn't re-signed, they didn't even offer him a qualifying offer, which, I mean, that you don't read into it too much. They may want to just negotiate a contract. They didn't want to go that high on the qualifying offer of $18.5 million. So we'll have to see what happens with Clayton Kershaw as well. But still sticking with Robbie Ray, again, all these teams, it's just a roulette game. I mean, it's the Red Sox, again, with Rodriguez leaving. They have the vacancy in the starting rotation. The Giants, should they want to build on the 2021 success. And if they don't get Gausman, they can go Robbie Ray. It can literally be a swap of the Giants picking up Robbie Ray and the Blue Jays picking up Kevin Gausman. So it's going to be very interesting to see that dynamic. The Mariners have also been linked to Robbie Ray. They have the money to spend. They just missed out on the playoffs. That starting pitcher could get them over the hump, especially in the AL West. So it's going to be very interesting. There's a lot of possibilities that could happen. And of course, I mentioned the Dodgers. If they lose Scherzer, if they lose Kershaw, you bet that they're going to go all in on Robbie Ray. And the Mets, again, spare no expense, channeling their Dr. Hammond from Jurassic Park. Spare no expense when trying to build a winner there in New York, because they need a winner desperately. Now, Kevin Gausman, we mentioned him a few times. The Giants are in on him, the Mets, the Cubs, the Rays, pretty much everyone else. Everyone who is in on a starting pitcher, it's going to be a domino effect. Max Scherzer will probably be the first one to go. Robbie Ray will probably be shortly after that. Kevin Gausman will be after that. Marcus Stroman will probably be after that, unless he signs to a team-friendly deal in New York, because it sounds like New York are making Marcus Stroman a priority after losing Noah Syndergaard. So it's going to be a very interesting dynamic to follow all these pitchers. Again, Clayton Kershaw, where the dominoes may fall. So a lot of good potential. Those are the top pitchers in the market. Tons of other pitchers out there, but it's going to be very interesting to see which teams pick up which players, because Max Scherzer, it's kind of buyer beware, because he is, if he signs a multi-year deal, I mean, you're talking about taking him into when he's 40 years old. Is that something that entices the Dodgers, who are all in? Is that something that entices the Giants? Is that something that entices, any of these teams? I mean, you figure he's going to go to an immediate World Series contender. So any of those teams, the Astros, the Red Sox, the Yankees, Dodgers, Giants, Angels doesn't really necessarily make sense, but if they get the right pieces in there, sure, that lineup can contend with anybody. But they need the starting pitching. That is a blaring need that they've needed for years, and they haven't been able to do that. So Max Scherzer could make sense there, but as far as a competitive standpoint, I think the Angels need a lot more pieces than a Max Scherzer to be very competitive in the AL West. But it could be a start. Again, it just depends on how long you're going to want Max Scherzer. You're going to sign him to a one-year deal. You're going to sign him to a 3-4-year deal that could take him into his 40s. So that's the pitching aspect of it. That's the pitching market. Then you look at the players, at the position players. There's tons of them out there. Again, Marcus Semien from the Blue Jays. There's a lot of interest. I mean, if I had my pick between a position player, and it sounds like the Giants are in on Nick Castellanos. I would hope that they're in on Marcus Semien. I mean, that would be great. But if I had to pick between Starlin Marte, Marcus Semien, Nick Castellanos, and let's say Chris Bryant, I'd be all over Marcus Semien, man. I mean, he's a Berkeley guy. Bring him back to the Bay Area. The A's should have never let him walk. And he went to Toronto, got a one-year deal, bet on himself, and now he's going to get a payday. But the thing is, I mean, you can find good outfielders that can hit. A second baseman that can rake like Marcus Semien, it's not as common. So any chance that you can upgrade your lineup, especially the middle of the lineup, because that's where he's going to hit. I mean, he's going to hit smack in the middle of that 3 to 5. So Marcus Semien, you can add him as second base, and that just changes the whole dynamic. And that's the interesting thing about the Giants, because yeah, they need the pitching. They need to bring back the pitching for sure. But with losing Buster Posey, it's going to be very tedious. I mean, they're going to have to figure out how to fill that void. That's why I believe that getting Brandon Belt was so critical. You lost Buster Posey. You can't afford to lose Brandon Belt. So I mean, he's back with the qualifying offer, but maybe there's an extension that comes in spring training or somewhere along those lines. But Marcus Semien, again, he doesn't play catcher, but he could fill the void in the lineup for sure for the Giants. But it sounds like the Rangers are in on him. The Tigers are in on him. Again, the Tigers just out of nowhere. Seems like the Tigers are actually in on a lot of those shortstops. I was seeing that they're in on Marcus Semien. They're in on Trevor Story, bringing him back because Story is from the Texas area. I saw that they're in on Corey Seager. I mean, literally every single shortstop, the Rangers have something to do with it, and it's because they have a lot of money. They can break the bank and get one of these guys. So I think one of the shortstops are going to go. Which one? I'm not sure, but it could very well be Marcus Semien. So we'll have to see what happens there. Tons of players still out there. Corey Seager, Javier Baez, Starlin Marte, Trevor Story, Chris Taylor, all these guys, all of them are available, and we'll have to see where they end up. And a lot of trade rumors as well. Luis Castillo from the Reds is drawing a lot of interest from clubs that need starting pitching. And Matt Olson, I mean, because the A's are definitely in sell mode, so it's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. But the anticipation, I mean, the rumors, again, the rumor mill, it's the hot stove. It's sizzling, right? It is sizzling. And Corey Seager and Marcus Semien, it sounds like they could sign soon. It sounds like it's going to happen before the potential lockout. So we'll have to see what happens there. But everyone, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. I had such a great time. It was great to be back. Great to talk some baseball with you. And I'm going to be back once a week in the off season. I'm going to keep this thing going, and hopefully we'll have some clarity on the CBA in the coming weeks. So you guys have a good one. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. Stuff your gut. Don't hold back. You only live once. You know what I'm saying? So go ahead and enjoy it. Enjoy your family. Enjoy the time that you have. And we'll talk next week. We'll talk a little bit about how our Thanksgivings went and keep you up to date on what's going on with the hot stove. So you guys have a good one. Be safe, and I'll talk to you next week.